8:11 at AM 930 WEOL, day three of the Lorain County Fair. Lots going on. I'll be out there this afternoon from noon to three, finding people and food vendors and kids with animals to talk with. Talked to some royalty yesterday and also some people that are chopping up steak. But a lot of folks in Lorain County who head down to Wellington have to pass through Oberlin if they do. And we have with us this morning Liz Schultz from the Oberlin Heritage Center joining us. Good morning.
Good morning.
And of course, the young adults are starting to come back to Oberlin College too. So it's getting a whole different vibe going on in the city.
That's right. First years were just moving in yesterday and today. So there are a lot more people around town.
Do you ever utilize the student body there with your Oberlin Heritage Center?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're always glad when they come for tours or their parents come to learn more about, you know, where their children might be going to school. But also, we typically employ about 3 to 5 student interns throughout the year. So they do a lot to help us with various research projects, giving tours, and learning about their new home for a while. So it's a great relationship. And we are going to have a special event this year. We're having a root beer float giveaway early in September to kind of welcome the students to our museum campus and show them what's right behind the college.
How do you use the interns? What can they do?
They can do all sorts of things. I mean, for them to give tours is always wonderful, especially when they're from other states or even other countries. So we have visitors who really like to see young people engaged with history and learning about a community. And they do research, like I said, and they are very good at finding tools for us. And they're very tech savvy, so that's very helpful at our museum. But they also bring ideas. I mean, they know how to increase our social media reach, and they know how to publicize things to people their age. So they're great, and they bring a great energy, too.
And I imagine, too, it's a learning experience for them because they probably have heard about Oberlin College, you know, world-renowned. But there's a whole lot more to Oberlin than the college.
Absolutely. They learn stories about the college. They take a get a real pride in their alma mater because they find out, you know, it's the first coeducational college, the first to have a policy for accepting students regardless of race, and all sorts of firsts were set there. So that helps them appreciate that more. But also sometimes in colleges, you know, students are so focused on school or college-related things, but when they work with us, they have to get to know the community and what else the community has to offer, and they meet people they may not otherwise ever meet. And we do give them life skills. I mean, just basic professional communication, showing up on time, you know, working on projects and exhibits, and just learning how nonprofits run. And we've had many student interns go on to jobs where they say the skills, if not necessarily the museum skills, but just the work skills they learned with us really helped them get their next job.
You have a thing going on, the Scholars and Settlers History Walk, which kind of combines a lot of that, you know, the people that are there, but also the educators, too.
It does. It's a great tour, and we're having a special one on August 27th, Saturday. We're kind of approaching the end of our summer history walk season. But Scholars and Settlers is just a walk around Tappan Square, and I think locals would think, well, I go through Tappan Square all the time. But it's just a great crash course history, and there are so many behind-the-scenes stories related to each of those buildings and monuments. And really, it's about a 75 to 90-minute tour because people don't know about those little, you know, like Catherine Wright Haskell, one of the Wright brother's sister, went to Oberlin College. So we get to bring in stories like that.
Now, it says here, triumphs, debates, and scandals.
Yes.
Drawing everybody into the, right?
There's the one scandal we talk about is Cassie Chadwick, who conned the college and the town out of about $300,000 around the turn of the century. So hers is a good, really good scandal story.
How did that happen? Oh, that's big money.
You're going to give,
well, you know.
You got to go on the walk.
That's how it is.
Yeah. All right. That would be a lot of money in that day, obviously.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of money today. For
close the bank.
Absolutely, wow. Too. And you also have something coming up for a woman who ran for president. We have this talk now with Hillary Clinton, but there's also some history that goes back.
Yeah, and it's funny. I actually scheduled this program about a year ago, but, you know, Hillary was running, but we didn't know she would definitely be the nominee. But Victoria Woodhull ran way back in the 1870s, and that was really before it was legal in some ways. I mean, women couldn't vote at that time, and she was technically underage, but that didn't stop her from running. So she ran with a kind of minor party, and I don't think she went very far, but it's just a great story, and she's a really interesting individual. I mean, there are some scandals and kind of controversies with her life, but she was really pushing the boundaries back then. And she was also involved in the stock market very early on. So she kind of made a path for herself. And she was from Ohio. So we wanted to kind of touch on election season without getting too deep into anything. So we thought Victoria Woodhull would be a great way to, I guess, get into women in politics.
When you say technically underage, what are we talking about?
I think the, I forget the exact age limit, maybe 35 or whatever the age limit to run for president. She was going to be that age had she been elected. So, you know, there'd be some debate about whether it was valid or not that she was running.
I was trying to find something there. It had a little bit about her platform or some of the things when she actually made her, you know, her throwing her hat or what, I guess, into the ring, talking about it. She'll accept the criticism or whatever and understanding what it meant to get into a political race like that.
Well, I think one of the big platforms was just women's rights and equality, voting. But she also had some other views about free love and kind of making your own path in life. I mean, marriage, yes, but, you know, at that time, women, when they got married, they gave up all of their rights to their property, income, and children. So she really wanted more equal opportunities for women in relationships.
Also, too, you have the celebration coming up of the Oberlin Heritage Center itself, the Monroe House. Tell us about the house and how you got to be in there.
Yeah, we're celebrating our 150th birthday. So the house is built in 1866. That was just after Giles Shirtliff was coming home from the Civil War. He and his new wife were making a home, so they built a brick home in Oberlin, which is just south of the conservatory or behind the post office today. So they lived there for just a few years, and then they sold it to James Monroe and his family. James Monroe became a congressman for 10 years. So it was the Monroe home from about 1870 to 1930 when Julia Monroe died. And then a few tenants lived in it after that, and then actually OBGYN had his practice there. So today we have it as a historic home, but we like to tell people, like, during that period, this used to be the exam room, and this was the X-ray lab. So we can kind of talk about two different histories there. And then the Heritage Center got it around 1960, and it took several years to bring it into, I guess, museum readiness. So around 1990s is when we really started opening up as a museum you could regularly visit.
So we just, before we went on the air, mentioned we were talking, you were on your one-year anniversary yourself as the director for the Oberlin Heritage
Center. Yeah, so I get to celebrate, too.
So how things have been going, and what are some of your plans? As you talked earlier about getting sort of young people involved, yourself like that, what are some of the things you see for the future for the Heritage Center and what you do?
Sure. Well, we're really trying to partner with different local organizations to offer new programs or bring up new histories that we maybe haven't talked about before. We're really strong on things like Civil War and abolition, so we're trying to push more for talking about 20th century stories like World War I, World War II, Civil Rights era. So we're going to be having more public programs about that. But also just kind of experimenting with some things. Like this summer, we had a mini historic swimsuit exhibit in one of our historic homes. So just kind of shaking up our own space, trying some temporary exhibits. And I will be talking at the Oberlin African American Genealogy and History Group about our oral history project. I'm in a discussion with the Hispanic and Latino Museum group that's based in Lorain to see if they might do a guest exhibit with us in the coming year. So, and hoping to talk about the history of Mercy Allen Hospital. So I guess kind of just stepping out of our comfort zone of just interpreting our three historic buildings and doing history walks and really trying to find the stories we haven't talked about before.
You have something coming up called Discovering Dave. You have George Wingard coming in. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, several of us on staff actually have a little bit of background in archaeology, so we were always interested in maybe pulling that in some way. And a visitor actually came and said, told us that you should look into this program because it's very interesting. So Dave was a potter who was enslaved prior to the Civil War. And what was very unique about Dave is he actually managed to read and write. And that was not very common for people in slavery. They didn't have the opportunity, and in most cases, it was illegal for them to learn to read and write. But we know he did this because he made these pots, and he would actually sign them sometimes, Dave. But he was also write his own poetry on them, which was just so unique for that time period. And the poems are kind of witty, too. So George Wingard is going to be coming up from South Carolina to do a program in the schools, and then maybe some discussions with college students. And then in the evening, he'll be doing a program at Oberlin College at Halleck Auditorium. And he'll be showing a bit of the documentary about Dave. And so people can see that, see the story. And he'll also talk about the process of how this all came together. And he's hoping to bring up one of Dave's actual pots, too, so people can see that artifact.
Wow. When you see something right there in front of you, it's a lot different than if you're just reading about it or hearing stories.
It is. People really connect through artifacts and like the museum, the actual historic buildings. I think people just are more easily able to jump back into the past when they can experience it, besides just reading or listening.
We're talking about things from days gone by. How do you apply social media, new technology to what you do?
Well, we use it on our Facebook page, and I mean, we do let people know about our events and kind of what's going on. Like, we might post pictures of our summer camps, but really it's another way for us to talk about these stories that we may not tell all the time. Like, we try to have a monthly theme. So for July, when the RNC was in the area, we tried to tie together some of our artifacts that had to do with politics, like old political buttons. Or Oberlin College used to have mock conventions that were huge deals, and like, they would bring in elephants and have floats and parades. So, you know, it's kind of tying national themes to what's Oberlin history. So this last month we had themes about Oberlin Olympians, or people somehow related to the Olympics, and also Brazil, because James Monroe was a consul down in Brazil around the time of the Civil War. So we use social media to, you know, keep people engaged and give them kind of fun facts or history, but also still talking about Oberlin history.
I'm on your Facebook page right now, and I'm just looking at a short video that has some display of like spectacles or eyewear. Is that something that you just posted on that? Or
I think that was posted a couple months ago. I think it's a lorgnette, which is like unfoldable glasses, or almost like you would hold up a monocle, but it's more a set of glasses. So it's really neat. They could fold up, and you just carry them around.
Now, is that something that you had posted on there, or did someone else shared with that?
I think our collections manager posted that.
So you have a lot of different things in your collection that you bring out occasionally, depending on people to see?
Yeah, social media is a nice way to bring out some of those things, because on our tours, we tend to interpret a certain time period. We have a lot on display all the time, but things like local business history or little objects like that, or maybe some dolls and toys that you don't always get to see on the tour, we can feature them in social media. Okay. So every Wednesday we have a What Is It Wednesday post that's usually collections focused.
And you're wearing the white gloves. See, you don't have to worry about people touching anything too when you're on social media. You can just look
that's
at
that's true.
And
the
see.
Hands you see are our collections manager.
Well, of course they are with the white gloves. That's the kind of neat thing. But that allows then sometimes any of those things. Do you continue to get artifacts or things coming in? Or is
we do maybe 4 to 5 a month. When the museum first started, like almost any museum, it was kind of everybody's attic. Like, oh, this is old. You want it. So we took it. I mean, which was fine for the time. But really today we really focus on things with an Oberlin story. So something that just came in last week, there was an old clothing store in Oberlin called Powers and Dolly. And not quite a descendant, but somebody who was affiliated still had a ledger book. So we could see from like 1940 how much a suit cost, how much pajamas cost. So we have that ledger book, and it's small. It will fit in the museum. And
Craig, I used to do commercials for Powers and Dolly.
This is, oh,
she
my.
She said an old clothing store. Sorry, thinking, Craig, we've been here a long time when that, of course.
Wow.
We have some kind of, and that's interesting. There's a lot of that oral history that people know of certain things, and these are artifacts that can kind of add to it and then just make a story out of it that you can add to a collection.
Yeah, and it helps people connect with that past and, like, bringing it up, you know, that's what we're talking about, the 20th century history. You know, it's all great to interpret the Civil War, but so many people today, that's not quite what they connect with. But Powers and Dolly and these things that people remember, these artifacts will help us talk about that more recent history.
Right. When you have younger people in, their history is a little short term, I guess it would be. You know, you look back 30 years to them, that's history if they weren't born before that. Whereas if you have people that have been that time, they don't have the same context or feel the same way about that.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows you to do that. Well, anything else you need to tell us before this morning, before we let you go?
I guess we've talked about our main programs coming up. So do visit our website to see when those programs are, the Victoria Woodhull program, Discovering Dave, and some of our history walks at birthday celebration. So our website is www.oberlinheritagecenter.org. And just as I said, we're approaching the end of the summer season. So we have history walks this Saturday, one about Freedom's Friends, that's at 11 this Saturday. And then that one that goes around the square is at 2:00.
All right. Liz Schultz with the Oberlin Heritage Center. I'm going to play, this is a Victorian, this is from your Facebook page, a Victorian doorbell. It required the person to just turn the knob on the one side of the door, and on the other side is the bell, not unlike a little bicycle bell that would let people know that you needed to get there. You can't do that doorbell and run, because this is one of those, by the time if you're trying to prank somebody, you do that doorbell, they'd open the door and you're still
right there.
Turning it. So.